Hey, I'm Tim Donaghy, and you're listening to the Advantage Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Advantage. I'm your host, Michael Fiddle. Today is Sunday, May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo. And on today's podcast, we are doing another episode of Check Ball, where we reflect on the NBA playoffs so far and go through some of the hottest topics around the league. We got some good ones. Of course, you guys know the rules. When the season ends for a group of teams, we say something nice about a team that's headed to Cancun. It's just an activity of good karma. We got to say something nice so that the gods in return bless us over the next few days as well. When everyone else in the media is shitting on the teams that are just ousted, we will give those fans and those players some hope. We are going to ask, was it the coach's fault for some of these teams that lost and are going to be firing their man at the helm? We will review some instant trade candidate players who have been eliminated, maybe get into some fake trades. Those are always fun. We are going to nominate an all-NBA playoffs first team thus far and an all-NBA playoffs no fun team. The guys who didn't show up, we're going to throw some salt on them. Lastly, we are going to debut a new little sponsorship that we have here on The Advantage, a company called Recovery for Athletes, the number one distributor of home recovery equipment for all athletes and fitness workout type people. So if you are interested, stay to the end of the show when me and the boys do something fun to preview some products from Athletes for Recovery. And of course, before we officially get started, let me remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to. To sign up for the fiddlespick.substack.com. That is my free gambling newsletter. That is where I send out all of my picks when I'm not breaking them down on podcasts. And if you want to watch this video as a show, this podcast as a show, you can do it on the Fantasy Basketball International YouTube channel. You can hang out with me and the boys for an hour. Let's get it started.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I do and say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Check Ball here on The Advantage. Joining me, as he always does, is our lead playoff correspondent, AV, and the man who holds more college records than you could count on one hand, Gibby Grave. AV, throwing it to you first. How you doing, and how do you feel 2 weeks in a row with Gibby just having a way cooler title than you?
Yeah, I thought the whole gig was that I keep getting the promotion, and if I can't really pick up on what my title upgrade is, then I'm just hoping that there's a salary bump, and I'll just check the mail one day, and that'll be where I'm really being praised for my hard work here.
Gib, how many college records do you hold?
I think technically five.
All right, so you can't count them on one hand.
One hand.
All right, down. That's a downgrade for Gib, AV. Live on air. There go promotion for you.
I would make that trade with Gib if he was so open-minded.
All right, so let's get into this episode of Check Ball. Rules are rules. We kick it to AV first. You know the list of topics. You choose where we start.
Yeah, I want to start with the say something nice about a team headed to Cancun, because this was such a good first round, and there are so many teams going home that showed more than I thought, or at least individual players. Between all the game winners, you know, we just had a game seven today, even though that's most people's least favorite series. So I want to start there, and I'll make my choice, actually. I mean, I think Orlando's sort of an easy pick because they pushed it to seven and Paolo's looks so good, but I'm gonna go with the Lakers here, because I think of everybody, the Lakers had the most go wrong with their coach and front office. They had maybe the worst playoff coach this year. They had the worst supporting cast, and maybe the worst starting lineup surrounding AD and LeBron, and they played the defending champs best team in the first round, and AD and Bron still looked really good. For anyone who didn't just see that that was a 4-1 series and actually watch the games. They were up at halftime every game. AD, again, showed why he's such a good playoff defender for a big. And LeBron, in our, you know, passing of the guard from old to young season, still was dominant. You could have him in your best five easily.
He will potentially come up in all-NBA first team. We are recording this a few hours after Game 7, Orlando versus Cleveland. So the only thing that I am now going to question with my own roster is, does Donovan Mitchell deserve LeBron's spot? So we'll get into that later. Gib, say something nice about a team headed to Cancun.
AB took the answer I had, but I'm gonna go deeper into it with the Magic. And you touched on the point I wanted to get to. Paolo is special. He is a special talent. Michael, again, I want to bring up my pick during the draft. I told you he would, and you were Jabari Smith. But Paolo, I was watching today, the Magic, like, he's so special that you can build around him. His supporting cast today gave him nothing. Absolutely nothing today. Now, I kind of like the players they have, but if you're able to get, and they have, I think they're the most cap space in the league this offseason. They could build something. Now, me and Fid, we were texting, like, who do they go after this offseason? I don't know if they can actually get any big-name free agents to go to Orlando. But if you have a guy like Paolo and you can, you know, get a good draft pick, this draft stinks, but, like, you can get a rotation player and one other stud, you could really see them, even next year, fighting for, like, Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, they're going to be linked to every team because they could offer them money. Ultimately, I think they flame out, and they're one of the casualties of cap space is sometimes overrated. But I liked Suggs. He felt like a guy who was ready to show up for the moment. He's got to stop kicking his legs out on every fucking three he takes because he got that 1 4-point play at the beginning, and then he did it 3 or 4 more times. But he showed up for the moment. Out. He's a guy who I'm like, you're probably a three on a potential, like, reliable three on offense and a 1A perimeter defender on defense. He was ready for the moment. He didn't shoot well today, but he had a very, like, good series in terms of, like, being headsy, being aware. It felt very Derek White-ish to me.
I like a Derek White comp there.
Okay. I'll say something nice about the Philadelphia 76ers. Second most cap space coming into this offseason. And I think they're the one that's linked to so many people where they actually might get a prize. And their floor is everyone going to yell at people for bringing back Tobias, but that's the floor of what is the possibilities. I think they lost in the best way possible. I think the narrative around Joel Embiid is still going to be a strong one, that he had a strong playoffs. They were plus, 46 in Joel's minutes and minus 47 in minutes without Joel. And then I heard on the low post, they say, I'm going to make fun of them for a second. I heard them say, that's as close as it could possibly get. You couldn't get closer. And I'm like, no, you technically, it could be a 0 point differential, or the winning team could have a negative point differential if they won every game by one, but lost two games by 10. So just having it be a 1 point differential net in the entire series goes to show how close it was, how great of a series, but it was funny that, you know, they got that. As a gambler, my mind was like, that's not how math works. Anyways, Philadelphia. Definitely Embiid locked in, part of the city. The rumors about him wanting out and potentially going to go somewhere else, I think it's completely overblown. I think he'll play for Team USA and come back to Philly. Maxey going to get the max extension, but he gets what's called the fun max, not the super max, because he's not going to make all NBA. And it's the type of max contract in which he's not going to be eligible to get that bump if he makes next year's All-NBA team. It was this season or nothing for that clause for him. So he is going to be on that friendly, team-friendly max contract, which they'll happily sign him to. And they're going to wait until potentially bring in one other player. Paul George is going to be at the top of that list.
Yep.
there's two other rumors that I've heard, and they're fucking big names. And I think we should go into it and just get your instant reaction and see if have you heard this and what would be your thoughts. There's apparently been talks of Bronny James going to Villanova, coinciding with Bron signing with the 76ers. And so that they could still be close to one another, so Bronny could still stay in college and develop well at Villanova, because we know he's entered the transfer portal. He's at least not going back to USC. So maybe the 76ers draft Bronny, or maybe he just goes to Villanova, so that way him and Bron could still be very close. The possibility of LeBron leaving LA, the number one destination in which that's a realistic possibility, is the Philadelphia 76ers, unless it's a trade to Golden State. That's going to be the other one. But the Philadelphia 76ers will be linked to LeBron for all the flirtatious stuff. And if you're flirting with LeBron, you got a chance at the dance.
Yeah, I had not heard that as much. I heard the PG rumor more. I tend to think that a lot of the Bronny-specific trade rumors are a little overblown. Like, in my mind, I'm hearing that and I'm thinking, why do they need to be in the same city while Bronny's in college and Bron's in the NBA? Like, their whole family's probably back in LA. They're not all moving to Philly, maybe. But they sort of have their own lives at that point. It's also, it's a little different now with how easy it is to travel and how busy they all are with their lives, that I don't think it's the end of the world if Bronny is a year away at college and separate, or if LeBron is back in LA. I also don't see LeBron leaving LA with his life being there. I sort of think that he's going to finish out there, or maybe do something where he finishes in like a short 2-year stint somewhere else, like an OKC or whatever, but with plans to move back to LA, as that's still sort of his hub where he and his family leave. But if you guys know more about it, I'll defer.
No, I just think it was something I've heard. So if you're Philadelphia, you got to be happy that you're linked to it and that it's even a rumor possibility. So it's a good rumor to be out there for you. Gib, the second thing that I've heard was, and the first part I kind of know to be true, is that Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat were very far apart on extension talks in towards the February deadline and proceeded to get no extension. And he wants like a full max. And apparently Miami does not want to give him a max contract for 4 more years. So I think there's a undercurrent of a real possibility that the surprise name that becomes available becomes Jimmy Butler leaving Miami this summer. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, I'm saying it here. What if Jimmy Butler reunites with Embiid and now Maxey, and playoff Jimmy joins Philadelphia? Because you know that's a place he would love to be. He was at the Kentucky Derby yesterday saying, if I were there, you know, Boston would have been home. New York would have been sent home. Like, he's saying, he literally said, if I was on the Heat, Boston would be home. If I was on 76ers, New York would be home.
I think it's really interesting. Are we sure that Jimmy Butler hasn't lost a step?
Well, and now with another MCL injury. I think he definitely has, but playoff Jimmy added to the 76ers as Maxey gains a step. I mean,
I'm with Gibby on this one. If he's lost a step in that playoff mode where he can take it to the, I'm going to carry a team to the NBA finals, then the fact that he already has lost a step in the regular season, whether it's caring enough or playing enough with his injuries, then he can't be worth a 4-year supermax. If he hasn't lost that ability to take his team to the next level in the playoffs, even if he doesn't play more than, you know, 60 games a year, I think he is worth it. But I'm with Gib. I think we've seen the best of Jimmy in the past, and he already was out kicking his coverage so hard.
All right, Gib, you said before we got on the recording that, I was going to say on the air, but we're not on the air. We're behind the curtain in the studios.
Oh, this is the air. This is live, baby.
Sometimes we do it live, but no, today is not a recorded live version. Gib, before we officially started recording, you said you could only name two teams with nice things to say. Who was the hardest for you to say something nice about? Like, which was the team that you think is in the most dire situation after a first round loss?
The Phoenix Suns.
Yeah. Same.
Really? I disagree.
I couldn't.
Okay.
I, the thing that I came up with on like for them, because I put a bullet for everybody, was you have an owner who is willing to spend. That's all I could think of.
Yeah, they don't have the capability. They have an owner that's willing to spend, but they don't have the ability as a team to spend because they're in the second apron. So they can't sign buyout guys. They've traded all their first round picks and swaps. They've traded all their second round picks. They can only sign, I think, one player on like the minimum, the mini MLE and then minimums. So they're like really kind of fucked. But at the end of the day, you do have Durant, Booker. And I think Beal looked better down the stretch of the end. He looked not great in the playoffs, but down the stretch of the season, he started to look pretty good. So I would, and then Grayson Allen got hurt, and then they got a really tough first round matchup in the Timberwolves. So if you bring in a new coach and get a better system around them, I think, I mean, they're still an easy, guaranteed playoff team, not even a play-in team next season.
I mean, because of how good the West is and how high their expectations were, morale is so low for the Phoenix Suns. I know that the owner's press conference after the season is not always the best indicator of where the team is going to be moving forward, but his press conference was so embarrassing. Yes, he's willing to spend, but not really willing to admit that they had some problems this year or they made some errors. And really came out basically like 20, I think he said 29 or 28 out of the GMs in this league would take our team over theirs. And I was like, that's just not true. You're either a little bit delusional or you're not really sure how these press conferences go and that it's usually better to say nothing and be neutral than sort of come out like this. But yeah, I think they so underperformed that they're a little bit old. And if they don't have guys like Beal willing to take on different roles and defend better, then it's going to be tough. I mean, again, bad coach to tough GM. I like James Jones, but tough GM owner combination right there. And I'm not excited given how few picks they are and the fact that they have to be all in.
All right, let's move on. Next topic, Gip, throwing it to you. Coach's fault, trade candidate players. Let's save the naming our playoff teams for the last topic.
Yeah. So for the coaches, in my opinion, for basketball and in the NBA in particular, it's rarely actually the coach's fault. And I say this because if you took the best coach in the league and put it on any of the teams that lost a series in the first round, I don't think any of the series changes. I don't think if you put Spo as the coach of the Magic, they win that series. I think Jamal Mosley did a great job. So he's not some a reason, like I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. He did a really good job.
I think Mosley did terrible. So that's the one I would flip.
Really? Wow, that team rallied behind Jamal so intensely. Yeah, they loved
him. No, I think he was a phenomenal coach. I think he was a phenomenal coach all year, deserving of being a finalist for the award. But I think there was a few examples of getting way too cute in your first playoff series. Starting Jonathan Isaac games 1 and 2, when he had never played, that starting lineup had played 30 minutes together over the course of the entire season, and just immediately benching Wendell Carter and not even trying the starting lineup that got you there. And then your starting lineup got blown out in games 1 and 2, and then you switched it for games 3 and 4, and then you started winning and started, you know, taking a much better hold of the series because they got the game 7 kind of slipped away from them. That was a huge thing. And then in game 7, he starts the fourth quarter when he's up like 5 or 7 points with a full 5-man bench lineup. I was so confused. That's when you play your guys your max minutes. A few of them were like close to foul trouble. Some of them had 4 fouls that, okay, maybe you didn't want them to pick up a fifth at the start of the fourth quarter. But like Cleveland went on a 5-0 run immediately to start the quarter and placed just total momentum flipped. I was like, wow, I can't believe Mosley started 5 bench guys to start a fourth quarter in a game 7 in like a do or die. It was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to jump on Jamal, but it also sounds like you kind of watched that series that was my least favorite series more closely and have some stronger opinions there. Just kind of taking Gibby's exercise here of how much do coaches matter, and I'm trying to figure out a series where I could throw coaches in where I think it'd be a big deal and a big change. I look at a series like New York versus Philadelphia. I love that series. I know it was only 6 games, but I do think it was closer. I think if you have Spo coaching the Sixers there and someone not like Tibbs, but someone like JB, Darvin Ham, whatever, coaching the Knicks, that's not a close series. So I think that Nurse did a good job and that Tibbs did a great job. And if you that series is one of those where if you put the mismatch coaches in where you almost have to have Spo as the top end there and then pick one of the newer guys as the lower end, that it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I felt Ham cost the Lakers a little bit. I felt Vogel definitely cost the Suns a little bit.
Yeah.
Media had bad feelings about Willie Green. I'm a little bit indifferent on those, but we'll see. I wonder who ends up getting these jobs. Budenholzer probably lands one of them, you'd imagine.
Yeah, Willie Green and the Pels are one of the harder teams for me to say something nice about because I feel like they just – after they lost Zion and that play-in game to the Lakers, they just
– trade candidates with.
Yeah, it was over. They were done. Yeah, let's go over to trade candidates because we should talk about their sort of big three, B.I., C.J., and Zion, and the fact that they have terrible stats when all three of them are together, and the team has basically come out and said – we've seen this lineup enough. It's time to make decisions. And that should mean one of the three of them is gone.
Yeah, and I'm going to add Jonas Valanciunas to that mix. It's a known fact that they've been trying to get rid of JoVal, and Willie Green was not a fan, and that was the first playoff adjustment. He was pulled him for Nance. So 100% expect Jonas Valanciunas to be somewhere else at the start of next season. And then I think the names that we need to start the trade rumors with is Brandon Ingram. I don't think that you get rid of Zion. He looked so good in that play-in game against LeBron and AD. And then he finally seemed like he was loving the moment and finally getting into shape that you don't sell now, even though they seem like they were willing to give up last offseason. I think they're resold and reback in. It's got to be Brandon Ingram. That's got to be looked to be shocked. And probably CJ too. CJ, I always feel like you can keep around because veteran leadership, probably pretty vocal, and could ISO create in a like late playoff games situation, right?
I mean, so, if you're saying that JoVal is gone, then it just coincides too perfectly with keeping Zion there because their biggest issue is those two can't play together at the same time. Nance
or
actually
B.I. with Zion.
Or B.I. with Zion. I mean, B.I. is tough because I think he's the most obvious one to move. It's just you're selling him at his lowest. He's not as bad as he was this playoff series. Something was going on. He was detached, you know, not in playoff huddles. I know that he is not as good as people maybe thought when he was going to be like the next KD style, but this is his lowest for his stock. So as much as I think you have to move him, it's hard to sell at someone's lowest.
Gib, I sent you a Kevin Durant trade as it looked like the Cavaliers were going down. But because Evan Mobley, I think, is eligible for the Fund Max as well this offseason. And I sent to you Evan Mobley for Kevin Durant, who says no. AV, let's throw this straight back to you because me and Gibby already kind of talked this out. What would have happened to Cleveland and how saved is Cleveland from immediately being thrown in the trade rumor circle? Do we think Donovan Mitchell now stays? He has one more year of team control and then the player option. So they could keep him and then trade him at next year's trade deadline if it's not looking better, not like they're going to make another playoff run that they want to keep him around for. Or do they just get smacked by the Celtics and then all the trade candidates are on? Do they keep Jared Allen and Evan Mobley? Do you re-sign Evan Mobley to a max or do you trade Jared Allen? Because he's probably pretty damn valuable too. They're both probably got some pretty good value. And I assume you're keeping Garland because Mitchell might be the one who's out.
I think that Cleveland has a lot of pieces, a lot going for them, and that there's obviously something wrong there. Other than that, you know, 16-1 streak they went on this year. There were constant rumors about Donovan Mitchell leaving, about JB not being the coach for them, about them figuring out the lineup. And Mobley did come into his own a little, especially in the playoffs, but about him sort of underachieving compared to expectations. I don't know what is wrong with Cleveland, but they're not good enough to try and have to overcome whatever their chemistry or whatever their issue is. I think that it has to be move on. I don't know if that means it's just JB, which would be sort of the least dramatic, drastic move, or if Donovan and one of your bigs is gone, and you sort of go back and rebuild. Because I like a lot of the things they do, especially with, you know, Minnesota showing that this bigger lineup can be effective in the playoffs. Now Cleveland can sort of say, see, we've been trying this for a while. You got to give us a chance to play in the playoffs with this team. But there's been something wrong. I don't know what it is behind the scenes, but they're a bit of a mess.
Gib, do you think Cleveland still blows it up, or do you think they're saved at all?
I don't think they blow it up. I think they do a big move with either Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, but I don't think they blow it up. I think one of those bigs has to go. You have to get a wing who can shoot. You have, like, Isaac Okoro is a good defender, but like, if you have Okoro, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen all on the court at the same time, those are three non-factors on offense, with two guys in Garland and Mitchell who are ball dominant and, you know, great with the ball, but they don't have as much space because you can kind of sag off three other guys. So they have to trade one of the bigs. Does Bickerstaff stay or go? I don't know. Most people are going to say he's going to go, but he's, I think, gone. This win. You think he's gone even with the win?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it shouldn't have even gone seven with a good coach, in my opinion. So that would be the one. This would be the one series where I'd say in both directions, because I know I was anti Mosley's tactics in this particular series. But yeah, Bickerstaff I think is definitely gone, and I think they probably get a haul for Jared Allen, and they try and keep Donovan Mitchell if he's willing to stay. We'll see. They do need more. You just need more shooting, because you just have an offense with Donovan Mitchell in a solid pick and roll and a hub of a defense surrounded by Evan Mobley, and you kind of recreated what you have in Utah that worked so well for so long. If you surround those with 3-and-D shooting and then you play into some shooting variants of these series, anything could happen, and that's a team that could suddenly win. Is Karl Anthony Towns off the trade market now that the Wolves look so good? Because he was one of the loud candidates.
That's a good question. I mean, especially because the biggest reason he was on that list was people were like, it's so stupid to pair him with Gobert, let alone that Naz Reid is also in the mix. But now that they're making it work so well, and you kind of need all three of those bigs, it's harder for me to move on. We have to see how the rest of this Nuggets series goes, is the answer there. But I think given both of your questions, both about what does Minnesota do and what does Cleveland do, it makes me think about that Utah Jazz team that you're talking about, built around, you know, Quinn Snyder, Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell. Maybe it really was that there was an issue with the other pieces, and if they could have put better pieces around those guys, have a good coach, have a guy like Donovan Mitchell who is so much better in the playoffs than people give him credit for. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe Utah was wrong. Maybe they actually could have built around that.
Booker, I don't think needs to be discussed. Durant, I don't think needs to seriously be discussed. Bradley Beal has a no trade clause.
I'm with you, except that if you wanted to do the no fun team next, I have Book number one on my list right now.
Wait. We got to quickly hit Bucks. Is anyone a trade candidate? Is Dame back on the block? No, right?
Oh, no, too soon.
Can't.
Middleton balled out. Lopez looked like he lost a step, but they probably have to keep him because the replacement options would be so thin. You just have to hope he plays a little bit better next year.
Yeah, for me, actually, the Bucks, given how terrible the vibes were all year, are actually not in a bad position. We don't know, you know, whether Doc is the problem or not, because there were so many other problems, and that this is probably the least at fault he's been for losing a playoff series that they're supposed to win. We don't know how they look all together in the playoffs because Giannis was hurt. And we do know that Dame time is still cooking, because even though, you know, he got hurt by the end and they lost this series, you know, he single-handedly won them a couple games there. And everyone was saying, take Tyrese over him during the year. They got the matchup and it wasn't close.
Clippers have Kawhi just re-signed during the season. He'll stay. Paul George, obviously a free agent, and it seems like the Clippers are willing to give James Harden the money, so James Harden will be back. Ultimately, I think Paul George probably stays in LA and they all run it back, but none of those seem to be trade candidates for the purpose of this exercise. AV, go right into it. No fun team. Who's your five?
Yeah, I want to start with, I know on the question you have team captain Tobias Harris. It's tough to top that given he just puts up no numbers. And if you watch the game, it's like at times you just know that he's like not even on the court when he is, which is pretty wild. But I think Book for me is top of that list because I had such high expectations for him. Last year in the playoffs, he was phenomenal. And I know that they didn't do anything last year, even with KD, but he was phenomenal. Not only putting up crazy scoring numbers on high efficiency, but he added this whole element to his game where he all of a sudden was like a Ant style lockdown two-way like guard wing defender. And I know he's a little smaller than Ant. That's a weird comparison, but the way he locked in last year was that sort of next level superstar. I play both ends. I'm going to do what it takes. And we did not see that from him in the playoffs this year. They had plenty of other issues that it's hard to point the finger at Book, but I still am surprised that we didn't see Book like do everything he can to scrap and survive in this series. So I think he takes a step back. He's now, you know, on the bench on the USA team behind Ant. And in terms of, you know, just sort of the media and the way people think about him, it's not like it was after last year.
He's definitely behind Ant in consensus player rankings at this point. Like,
yeah.
Ant took over Booker. Now we have the matchup of who's better, Luka or SGA. We'll crown one of them at the end of this playoff series. We'll crown Halliburton versus Brunson. And we'll do
– yeah.
There was one other good one too. Shoot, it'll come to me. All right. Book, I was surprised by Book. I did not have him. He's still at 49 in the last game. So he balled out. And I love Book talking shit, but yeah, he did not play great the first three.
Yeah, I mean, that elimination game was by far his best game, and I'm happy that he showed up. And I just thought that level of desperation we would have seen, if not from game one, certainly from game two on. But I think that's more of an expectations thing, that my expectations were high. I had him as someone you could build a team around who actually stepped up in the playoffs, and he took a little step back for me.
Gib, I also had Embiid on my no-fun team. Thought he played great at times, but inability to rebound and just kind of some of the dirty shit he was doing, like knocking Brunson and pulling down Mitch Robinson. Was that the play that injured Mitch Robinson?
It was. I think Mitch was already, he was already a little hobbled, but that definitely added to it.
Yeah, like there was a few dirty Draymond-esque Embiid plays. So I put him on my no fun team. Like loved ultimately watching some of his playoff performances and him hitting some of those massive threes, but terrible fourth quarter stats through the bulk of the series and some dirty fucking plays. So you get on the no fun team. He gets a good vacation to Cancun because the box scores look nice and the narrative around his minutes are going to be nice and the Bell's palsy and playing through numerous injuries. But still made my no fun team along with Tobias from the 76ers. Who else did you have, Gib, that we have not discussed on a no fun team?
I'm going to stick on my Orlando Magic train that I've been on all pod. But Franz Wagner.
Franz.
What the hell was he doing literally all series? He's the reason they lost this.
He had one great game.
Game three, he balled out.
Yeah.
So, like, he has the potential to be great. I think he was 1 of 16 today from the field.
No way.
I think it was the worst elimination game for a dude who took 15 or more field goal attempts in NBA history.
That's a terrible stat.
Yeah.
And he had another game in the series. I don't remember which game it was. Just like he just cannot hit anything. He gets in his own head. He, like, can't shoot. He's like, he'll turn the ball over. He had one game where he had a great first half, and then the second half scored 0 points and had six turnovers in the second half. Cost him. He had some absolutely horrendous games where when we were thinking about trades, I was like, is Franz a trade candidate? Like, one, does he fit next to Paolo? And can you sell him to someone who thinks, like, oh, that 30-point game is him on a consistent basis? Because he just didn't show up, and it seemed like the moments of the playoffs were too big for him.
Yeah, he better be shooting thousands of jumpers in the gym every day.
Yeah, I actually do sort of think this will motivate him and turn him around. I think the fact that it's hard to lure people to Orlando and they have both Wagners there and Franz sort of likes to be there, that even if he's not a perfect fit, it's like, you better make this work. And I also kind of piggyback on what Gibby said earlier on our Cancun teams that we want to praise. Paolo not only played phenomenally, but I saw him in his press conference after game 7. And he's incredibly mature talking about Franz and how he struggled, but how he supports him and that he knows he's going to be better than this moving forward. And it was a really sort of team brother bonding type thing that I think it's true. But even if it's not, it's impressive that he has the wherewithal in an emotional end of a season moment like that after game 7 to have your boys back. So I love to see that from Paolo.
Should we start crowning some of the all NBA playoff first teams?
Yes, this I'm pumped about.
This is like the best players. These are not people who outplayed like what they should do.
This is the best, just the best.
Mixed criteria for all NBA voting as is, so I'm open to interpretation from the voters.
Who do you got, Gib? Start us off.
Should I do my five or just pick one guy?
All five.
I mean, yeah, I think all five.
Okay. Some of them are easy.
Yeah, there's three locks for me that we all better have.
I have Jokic.
Lock.
I have Ant.
Lock.
Lock.
I have Brunson.
Lock.
Lock.
I have Kyrie.
Nice, me too. Let's go.
I have him honorable mention.
Let's go.
I have Kyrie. And the fifth one, I was like going back and forth who I wanted to put on here. But because he hit the shot, I'm going to go – with Jamal Murray. That's my fifth.
Okay.
Wow.
I had LeBron, who I might take off, but my locks were Jokic, Ant, and Luka.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that one of my locks is on neither of your rosters. But
Luka is on my roster. Luka is on my roster.
You have two Mavericks on your all NBA.
I do. He's not a lock, but I have. So I had my last two spots could have either been Kyrie, Luka. They could have been LeBron, AD, or they could have been SGA, Donovan Mitchell. Those were up in the air, and I went Kyrie and Luka. They put that team on their back. Kyrie especially. I was impressed.
Even some of the defense in the games where his offense wasn't great. But Luka's stat-stuffing ability and just his control of the whole game. Kyrie was a great Robin to Luka being Batman, I felt. So I still ultimately gave it to Luka.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Luka, I mean, Kyrie had his Batman moments. And because we're used to seeing Luka at a higher level than he was this series, which is crazy to say, he averaged like a 30-point triple-double. He was a little hobbled, a little less efficient. But he was great, and Kyrie was just so good. But I am a sucker for how good he looks doing it and the fact that he can really pick his moments. That there are other guys here who are like, if you told me SGA had 4 points in the first half, I'd be like, his team's down 50. But the fact that Kyrie can know his moments, kind of hang out, do what he has to, and then see, okay, time to put the team on my back, 30 in the second half, let's go.
My honorable mentions were SGA, but it wasn't anti-SGA as much as it was just kind of anti-Pelicans without Zion.
Exactly.
So it was like I was more impressed with some other guys because of the state of the competition. Yeah. I had to have Gobert as an honorable mention. He was never going to make it because Jokic took down AD and LeBron. But for the Suns to not score 100 points in any game the entire series, I think I might have heard a stat that says the Suns didn't score 50 points in any of the halves either.
Wow.
If that's true, that's insane. But yeah. I know they didn't score over 100 in any of the games. So Gobert to hold down the fort of that defense and stop the Phoenix Suns, whose whole concept was we're going to be able to score 120 on anybody, to put them all under 100 each time is crazy.
I'm going to make an amendment to mine.
Okay.
I'm taking Jamal Murray off. I'm putting Donovan Mitchell on.
Okay, good. I'm glad one of us squeezed him in. Yeah. Listen. And everyone who's listening to this pod and being like, why isn't Jamal Murray getting his flowers for his game-winning shots, or why isn't Tyrese or Brunson getting their flowers? We did an episode of Check Ball last week where we went heavy on Jamal, Tyrese, and Jalen. The last question that I have before we get out of here, I don't want to forecast too many series, but I just want to do quick hitter predictions. Who wins? And if you want to give me how many you can, Thunder Mavs.
Give me the Thunder, but it's going to be close.
Give me the Mavs.
Nice. I mean, I want the Mavs. I do sort of think the Thunder is so well-rounded right now. Jamal's playing so well.
I think Thunder as well.
I mean, the series that I want to pick so badly, the team that may not win, is the team that won game one last night. I want Minnesota to beat Denver so bad. I know that I am over-invested in Ant and have so much stock and try and work him into every conversation that we have, but I miss Jordan in the league. I miss the crazy feeling of a dude like that, and just watching his games like make me feel some type of way. I just love the way he plays. I hope he goes all the way to the finals. Go Ant.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think it'd be a great narrative for the league to have someone get there who like really fucking cares about it too, because it always kind of bothers me that Jokic doesn't really seem to care that much. Let's do Pacers Knicks. Gib, I know you're gonna say Knicks, but in how many?
Six.
AV, who do you have in that series?
Exact same, but I'm more looking forward to this matchup than I thought I would be, especially the Brunson Haliburton thing. I think Haliburton actually has a lot of pressure on him here,
and I think that storyline's more interesting than we realize at first, because they were the two point guards on FIBA last year. Brunson was the starter. Tyrese was the backup. Tyrese ends up getting the Team USA nod over Brunson.
And plays well.
They play against each other, and they're kind of for the throne of that, who's better out of them two. So that's kind of a key matchup to watch.
Yeah, I love that. I also think it's probably the two most old school coaches in the league from like the past coaching guard, other than Pop, if you look at Carlisle and Tibbs.
Yep, that's another good one. Yep. And just storied franchises playing against each other. I'm sure we all have the Celtics over the Cavaliers. Does anyone have any bold predictions or feel any differently type of way that it's going to be actually 6 or 7 in any direction?
I certainly don't. My bold prediction might be that for as much fun as the Celtics have been all year long, that I don't really focus on their series until the Eastern Conference Finals. That's how sort of boring their matchups are in the playoffs compared to other teams.
Gabe, Celtics in how many?
5.
Okay, and then the final one that we have is this Wolves-Nuggets. Ultimately, I'm going to go Nuggets in 6. What are you guys going to say? I should probably bet that now that they're down 0-1.
If that's now is the time. And they really might just turn this around so aggressively. I have to go with what I want here. And I think the only way that the Nugs pull it off is if they win it in 6 and sort of steal this. I hope Timberwolves in 6.
I'll go Nugs in 7 at home. They're going to bring it back and they're going to win that 4-1.
That's all right. Like.
So that's going to wrap up Check Ball. But some very exciting news is a little new sponsorship that we have coming to the Advantage by the company Recovery for Athletes. Like I said, they are the number one online retailer for home recovery equipment for all your like fitness needs, Theraguns, home saunas, ice baths, anything from really high level stuff, infrared lights to basic needs like collagen and protein powder. So check out recoveryforathletes.com. You could use code THEADVANTAGE or you could use code FIDDLESPICKS. They are both activated. So however you refer to me, it will work. And you can get a nice discount off an order. I gave these boys the assignment of looking at recoveryforathletes.com and choosing an item that they would pick if they had everything cost $1. It's a fun little game I play when I often go on, well, I don't really often go on dates, but in the rare times I go on dates and I'm bopping around town with a girl and like grab a coffee and go into a gallery or whatever, I say, if everything here cost $1, what thing would you buy? So I gave my two best guy friends this same assignment. And I said, go on this website and choose one thing for $1. And let me know what you come back with. Gib.
Yeah.
Start us off. You look ready and prepared.
I am ready.
Getting back, relaxing, and ordering from recoveryforathletes.com.
Maybe got me thinking to think bigger, think more expensive. And so I'm going with the Superior Float Tank. That is a revolution float orb. So essentially, it has like thousands of pounds of salt in this like little orb with water, and you like float in the water. I saw Steph Curry uses it all the time. Yeah. I don't know if he uses theirs, but I see that he does it in the off season or during the season to recover. And it seems like a post workout getting him this thing, I would feel like $1 million afterwards.
I mean, I love that choice. This whole store gave me like Sharper Image meets Sports Authority vibes. And I love that sort of like everything here is like from the future. I can't wait to see what is most expensive. So that's why I was going high end. And I encourage the boys to do the same. So my actual pick was the Medical Nature 8 Plus Outdoor Infrared Sauna, which is just a giant, beautiful wood-looking sauna that I could put in my suburban home here. But then the hustler in me had a second choice. If everything's a dollar, I might have to go a little bigger here. I found a $54,000.
More bigger than the natural outside wood sauna for me and all my homies. What are we going with, AB? What's even bigger than
I'm going with the sauna. I want the sauna. I think a sauna is part of a good, healthy life. This thing looks beautiful. I can have everybody over. We're going with the sauna.
So I went utility. Overpriced.
Okay.
I live about a quarter mile away from my gym, which is open until 8 p.m. every night, which has a sauna in it and a hot tub. So I could easily go walk to a sauna and jump in. I also live about 25 steps from a pool that is very clean and not heated. So where I live, it gets to about 55, 60 degrees at night. And I can just go easily jump in a very clean pool and basically have a cold tub. So I have access to a cold tub and a sauna and a hot tub within 5 minutes walking in all directions. So for those reasons, I don't need some of the other equipment that looks great. And while it does look fucking amazing, doesn't fit my personal needs. However, I've been hearing lots of crazy stuff about this light therapy. And I saw this just massive unit for an infrared light. It was called like the Huga 1500. It's like $1,000. And it's an infrared light that you essentially stand in front of, or you place somewhere in your room and you turn on, and it promotes all this healing. It's great for your skin. It boosts the collagen. It restores all the mitochondria in your cells. And there's two levels to it, infrared and near infrared. And the near infrared setting penetrates deeper into your body to heal your muscles, your joints, your ligaments, and all that stuff too. So I, with my back problems, often just lay on the ground and do stretches that I was like, I would love this massive infrared block, and I'll just put it next to me as I'm lying on the ground and doing my daily stretches. Because then I'm going to get all these amazing treatments while I functionally do the rest of my day. So I chose the Huga 1500, and I would get that for $1. And I think it would be very fucking useful in my life.
I think that's a good choice. You look like you're super penetrated, and that could really
help super
take therapy to the next level. That's good.
Fellas, fun game to choose something for $1, right? The thought experiment is fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Good date topic for three single gents on a pod.
I don't know if I'm taking notes, but now that I have the sauna, I think that's going to take my dating to the next level too there.
Yeah, that would be very true as well. All right, that's going to wrap us up for today. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to the fellas for joining me. Talked about a ton of fun NBA topics. Remember to check out fiddlespicks.substack.com, my free gambling newsletter. To check out the Fantasy Basketball International YouTube channel, where you can watch this as a full podcast video, and to check out recoveryforathletes.com, where you could maybe try and find something, but it might cost you more than $1, but you could use code FiddlesPicks and it might help you out a little bit. Thank you as always. Peace out.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.